Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Welcome to the Conscious Vibe. We're so excited to have our guest today, Simone Millicis, who's with us from not down under. We like to say she's a Kiwi, but she's in Costa Rica, actually. Serial entrepreneur, author, and I understand that you have some luxury real estate that you tend to perhaps rent out or lease, or people have the opportunity to stay in. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm actually Australian, so I'm not a Kiwi because that's a New Zealander. So I'm an Aussie. And I'm in Costa Rica at the moment because this is one of the places that we have. It's called El Lugar, which is the place in Spanish. And it's a resort that we're building. And it's freaking amazing. It's so beautiful. The land here and the earth is just like, you know, I went horse riding today and you're riding across the land. You're like, God, there's so much crap going on in the world and I'm here. It was so beautiful. But I grew up in Australia. I was very adamant I wanted to see the world at a really young age. And I was 19 and I went off to America and I stayed in America for 3 months and then went and lived in Europe. And I've always had this really strong desire to not necessarily change the world, but change the way people were with each other and how they were with the world, like how they were with the planet. You know, you grow up and you look around and all you see is people doing trauma and drama and having this like, you know, I don't know, like telenovela sort of mentality. And I was like, come on, there's got to be something more than this. There has to be something more than this. So remember at a really young age, I wrote this whole piece on vulnerability because I was like, what if people could meet each other and they were just like, hi. You know, it wasn't these barriers or these walls that we create. You know, like when kids run into each other and they don't go, hi, my name is this or anything. They're just like, look at them. They may say, do you want to play? Or they may just indicate, do you want to play? And they just play. Like, what if we lived on a planet like that? So, I mean, and business has always been a really big thing for me. I think it's a really great way to how to get stuff out there and it can be really malleable. You know, you can change it up all the time. So one of the books I wrote is called Joy of Business. And then I'm trying to fast track. And then I met Gary Douglas, who's the founder of Access Consciousness, about 21 years ago. And I was like, this is what I've been looking for. This is exactly what I knew could exist on the planet. So I've been working with Access for the last 21 years and traveling around as much as I can, facilitating seminars, etc. Obviously, the last couple of years I was stuck in Australia, but they let me out. so here I am.
So as the global coordinator, what does your job entail? What is it that you literally are charged with doing with Access Consciousness?
Well, it's changed a lot over the years because when I first started, we were in 4 countries. And now we're in 175 countries. So, you know, I used to do a lot of things like dot all the I's, cross the T's, organize seminars, organize, you know, book launches or anything like that. Like just the business. It was a US-based company. And then they were coming to Australia, Gary and Dane, who were the two, you know, the founder and the creator. And I was like, hey, I think we need an Australian company. It's going to work much better. So then we have a UK company as well now. So we've just expanded. So my job I have quite a few assistants now. Somebody else just a couple of years ago took over being worldwide coordinator because I'm one of the main speakers at events.
Got it.
And okay. It just became too much. Like I was in Brazil and I remember doing this class and I was so busy. But at 2 a.m. in the morning, I'm still on my computer, you know, going and trying to answer everyone. I went, okay, I got to let go of something. I have to let go of something to allow this to grow and exponentialize because it so matches the energy of what I want to see in the world. So, yeah, I mean, lots of different things. Like right here now at the moment in Costa Rica, I've been contributing to how we're creating this business and how, like, you know, there's investment possibilities and all that sort of stuff. And we just met today with, you know, we're building the venue and all this sort of thing. So it's very diversified, I will say, which I like because I never get bored for a second.
That sounds so fun. I mean, I was just thinking about there's a show that I every now and then follow on HGTV that mm-hmm. shows this couple who is basically literally from the ground up building this resort. And that's the first thing yeah. I thought about when you shared what you're currently doing and working on. And I've never been to Costa Rica, but I understand it's amazingly beautiful. Are you in any way, shape, or form capturing this entire experience, whether videotaping what you're doing or codifying in some way, so that there's like this record of the process of what it took to get from, you know, what you saw as a vision to being reality?
Yeah, we actually do. We've got some guys shooting a documentary at the moment, and we were just talking about it yesterday, and I said, what do you think this is going to be like? And we were looking at about 6 or 8 episodes of 20 minutes long, because there's a lot of things that we've been doing here that are different. Like, we had the environmental lawyer came out yesterday, and she was like, wow, you guys are actually doing what you're talking about. Like, you're not cutting down trees. And, you know, the first company that we met with wanted us to, every casa, you know, every house, they wanted us to dig out like about 12 feet of dirt so that we could have this like solid platform. And we're like, no, we actually want to build on the land, like with it. And to be honest, like, I've been here so many times when there's been no buildings. You know, horse riding across it, et cetera, and so beautiful and stunning and the animals and everything. And the last time I came, we had started to build, and I was like, wow, I've never been to a place before that it had this energy of like it added to it from what we were creating. So there's a whole lot of different things that we're doing, from the sewage system to the water system to, you know, all of it, and even like the roofs and everything, and working with you know, different villages, etc. So yeah, we are documenting it. So where it's going to show up, I'm not sure yet, but we are documenting it.
I'm sure you'll find some outlet that's going to be really interested in this, because where you are is extremely beautiful. Again, I've never been there, but I can only imagine. And then also what really resonated with me, the idea of contributing to the land, right? It's more of such a mindful approach to how to develop and bring something of value to a community. I love it.
Yeah, look, that's been pretty imperative to me for quite some time. As long as I can remember. I mean, I grew up in Sydney, Australia, you know, on the beach. There's a lot of space. Like, you know, Australia is almost as big as America, and yet we've got 26 million people. You know, it's like this. So there is a lot of space. So you grow up with that. And to me, it's like, you know, we've got to start acknowledging what we can be here, or we will destroy it. And it's like just flipping it aside and dismissing that and thinking, oh, somebody else will handle that. Somebody else will look after that. I think it's time that we need to stop doing that and actually look at what are we creating? What are we choosing here? Like, what choice are we making today, and what future is it going to create? Because, I mean, like, you know, when 2020 hit and I was in Budapest and Hungary and came home, and of course we were all like, what the hell is going on? You know, it's like, what is this? And no one could travel. And especially in Australia, they just had total, like, no one's in or out of the country. So it's this big, massive island. And I noticed that because I live in Queensland, it's usually very tropical, and it hasn't been like that for a long time. And it started to become tropical. Like, we have a lot of tourists that come to Queensland, and they're always saying, oh, I wish it was sunny today. You know, it'd be sunny. But then I noticed the weather started to change. We started to have that torrential rain that you have in a tropical area. Yep. And these big, beautiful butterflies showed up. And it was like nature was changing with us as this was occurring. So I think we've got to start listening to those whispers and listening to what, you know, the earth is asking of us. And, I mean, I love it here. Do you guys like it here?
We like to be there. That's for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. So listen, Simone, you have to be extremely busy, as you described. You're working on, of course, building your own brand, but then there's Access Consciousness as well. When we talk about ultimately what it is you want to achieve, when we think about your brand and everything that's going on, what is it you want people to think about when they think about you and your brand?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that you say me and my brand, because I don't really look at myself as this brand. It's like, I work with Access Consciousness, the tools, et cetera. I've written a few books. And for me, I would like people to get that they're way more brilliant than they think they are. Yeah. And you have a lot more capacity than you think you are. And if I can empower like one person to get that, you know, they're not as screwed up as they think they are, then what else could we choose? Like, to me, I know it sounds like this utopian ideal of like, what if we lived in a world with no judgment? Well, I'm going to do the absolute best I can, you know? It's like, what if kindness was something that was more available than judgment? Like, judgment never gets you anywhere. And it's like, it's, so that's what I would like to look at. And Simone Millis's, I mean, I know I have a website and I have all that sort of stuff and, you know, Instagram and everything and written books and people come to seminars, but to me, it's not about me. It's about them, like empowering them to know that they know. And what do you know? Because most people are sort of in this sort of, you know, this is what society says. This is what my family says. This is what my culture, my religion, et cetera. So they try and fit into this box. And I don't know about you guys, but I've never fitted. And I tried really hard to fit and then was like, this is not working, you know. So it's like, what if we start to discover the difference that we are, and what if the difference that we are is what the world requires, what consciousness requires? So that's more so what I would like people to get.
Well, that's amazing. And you know, when I say brand, I don't mean from a commercial perspective, but just what you described, an entity that inspires others. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by brand. I don't mean it from the commercial sense. I think those rewards come. Right. But you've got a lot going on and people are listening and paying attention and you are inspiring people and affecting people. So I think that's awesome. And what you said about empowering people, a lot of what we do, we probably won't see in our lifetime. Right. But you've touched people who will live, you know, beyond you, fortunately or unfortunately. And I think that's really powerful, the things you're talking about. So I think that's awesome. And the way you described it is great.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I, you know, you just, you know, what triggered for me was when you just said, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I've never fit into a box. And I got to tell you that hit home for me in such a big way because I've never felt like I've ever fit into a box. And, and just trying to live that out in a way where people just accept that that's who you are, right? And that you're doing things that you want to try to be better every day. And along the way, hopefully you can inspire and help others as well, right? And so I think that's a difficult piece for people to really uncover about who they are and in themselves. When do people get that moment with you? Like, have you experienced like an aha with people in some of your training or some of your conferences where people will all of a sudden get this aha moment? Is it, what is it about your conversation that gets them there?
Look, Access Consciousness has a lot of tools and processes, and it's got like, you know, this weird ass clearing statement, et cetera, and things like that. Like, to me, it's funny because the weirder it gets, I go, that's so normal. Because, you know, this life is not normal. Like, we're not normal. We're more abnormal than normal. And we try, you know, as again, that whole fitting thing, we try and be normal and we're not. So it does have some tools. And one of the main tools, though, is asking questions, is not going to answer a conclusion. Because if you ask a question, it's, you know, you literally, like, even if you're like, what else is possible? How does it get any better than this? Then you're asking this question. And then you're allowing, you know, the universe, consciousness, your awareness to step up and show you what else is possible. Where if you have that mindset of, well, nothing else is possible, that's as good as it gets, well, that's what you're going to create. Because we create our reality by our thoughts, by our choices, etc. So, and again, I see so many people limited by, I'm going to say, by family and friends that they grow up with a lot too. Like, you think these people have your back, but for me, it's like, my father was amazing. He died about 9 years ago and he was incredible. He was always like, Simone, you have to go live your life. This is your life. You choose it. And he'd say to me, oh, you're so wild. Like, you know, and he'd go to church every Sunday and say, I pray for you. And I'd go, thanks, Dad, you know. But my mother was always like, really judgmental of me, and everything I chose, she would say, I'm going to be embarrassed by your choice, or, you know, you act like nobody owns you, which confused me because I was like, nobody does own me, you know. But it was this very different parenting, and my dad gave me so much freedom, and I'm really super grateful for that. And all my mother did was try and box me in, and she still does, she just still doesn't get me, like, and that's okay. And to give her the freedom and be an allowance for that's how she is, but not to hold herself back on her. And if people stop holding themselves back based on anyone and just have that place of they know where they can go, they know who you are, then you know who you are, then I think we're going to create something really different here. But you asked me about, there's one guy many, many, many years ago, and he'd fought in a couple of wars, et cetera, and he looked like he was dying. Like he had a cane and his skin was all gray, et cetera. And he walked into one of my classes, and the second day he walked in and he didn't have his cane, and he looked at me and he came over before we started class and he said, Simone, he said, I want to thank you. He said, I walked in here and I pretty much thought my life was over. And he went, and I've decided I want to live. And it was just this moment, like he had no cane. His skin had got color back in it, you know. And the fact that he was actually choosing to find out what else was possible rather than go, oh, life is over, you know, it's like, and that happens every day, like all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time, that people have more of them. So every class I do, I'm like, I feel so lucky that I get to do what I do.
And that's probably part of it too, right? The fact that you feel the way that you feel about the work you do, I feel like it brings something to you in terms of your ability to, and DJ, he knows what I'm about to say, you know, the ability to flourish in life is because you make these choices and you're able to be in this space where the goodness sort of flows, if you will. On the opposite side of that, how does that work with, for instance, like your relationship with your mother? Where there's this judgment or there's this tension, have you been able to have the relationship that you want to have with her through that? And that's just not just for you, but I'm thinking about that for others where we oftentimes struggle in these relationships we have where we know that there's a piece of judgment in a space where there should be love and we mm-hmm. don't get it the way that we want. How do we move through that?
Look, it took me a really long time. And I remember before my dad died, he said to me, Simone, I'm so sorry. He said, your mother doesn't get you. And I went, it's okay, Dad. And he went, and he said it to me about three times. And he said, I'm really sorry. I don't think she'll ever get who you truly be. And I went, I know, and it's okay. And I get that he was really sorry about that because he just saw this, you know, I was this amazing daughter to him, et cetera. So I had that. And like I said before, I'm super grateful. And my whole life, I tried to get my mother, like, if I just did this, then she'll love me. If I just do this, then she'll love me, you know. And my whole life, and she was like, I remember at one point, I was at lunch with a whole bunch of people, and she looked at me, and she was sitting next to me, and she went, oh my God, Simone. She said, there you are with those creepy eyes. And I just sort of went, okay, because that's what I grew up with. Like, and, you know, I don't know if everyone can see, but it's like I've got these bright blue eyes. And my friend looked over and went, a lot of people would say that Simone has beautiful eyes. And it was that moment that I went, holy shit. And I was like, she's been doing this, like this gaslighting my whole life. And I've just been buying that as truth rather than creating my own reality. So
how old were you?
Oh God, like 40?
Oh,
I know I look really young, don't I?
No, you do look great. But I didn't know if it was a childhood experience or not, but wow. Okay.
It was my whole life. Yeah, and I just got used to it. Like, you know, I mean, we talk about abuse and we talk about obvious abuse like sexual and physical abuse. But I tell you what, abuse like that constantly is something that most people don't address, and it's there and it's real. So it was this moment, and I'm really grateful I had Access Consciousness tools that I sort of went, what am I doing here? So, and one of the tools in Access that that we talk about is, you know, what if there was two species on the planet at least? And it's like one is human and one is humanoid. And humans are more sort of the people who will, you know, judge others. They're, you know, they're always judging other people and, you know, what they've done wrong, et cetera. And humanoids are the ones who wake up usually judging themselves, and they're usually quite creative. And I realized that my mother was more human, and this is not about judgment. This is just about there's different species on the planet. Like, you guys will probably recognize that when I say that. And it's like, you know, my mother was more human because she would judge everyone and she would always talk about people. And I was always like, what's wrong with that person? And then she would yell at me for talking back to her. And I was like, I don't understand. Why don't we like this person? You know, but she was always like that. And then, and like, you know, the big joke was, if you want to know if you've put on weight or lost weight, go see my mom because she's going to be the first one to tell you, you know, that's the sort of thing that she would do. So I literally energetically went, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to divorce you. And it's like, I still see her. I still, you know, take her out to lunch or do whatever I choose to do. But I don't make her judgments real in my world. And it really took a long time to go, okay, that's what she perceives. She's got such a small life, the way she functions. That's her choice. Mm-hmm. I'm in allowance of that. And it's like, but I'm going to choose my life. And family is so interesting because I get that we're supposed to have this, you know, the rules is you're supposed to have this family that's all loving and all whatever. And it's like, I'm sorry, there's hardly anyone that I know that has a total family that is like that. You might have one member of your family. If you're lucky, you've got two members of your family who truly have your back and are going, go, please, be everything you can be. Like most of the time families are sort of have this energy of like, you know, don't you have enough or don't outcreate your sister or your brother or your father or your mother or something like that. And it's like, what if the whole family concept was one of the biggest lies that we've ever been told? And if we didn't buy that as a truth, then what would we choose?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I have way more friends in my life that truly have my back, the people I work with. It's like, you know, they're the ones who get me and are always encouraging me to be greater and to be more. So it did take a while, and unfortunately I see that happen for a lot of people to break away from something like that. And like, you know, I mean, like I said, I still talk to her. It was more energetically, not trying to get her, like, love or her acknowledgement with everything I chose. Like, yeah.
And you know, Simone, that sounds like a challenging journey. I think to your point, I don't think a lot of people realize how much of a journey that is. And some of it has to do with, you know, daughter, mother specifically, right? And that relationship and seeing images of each other in yourselves and that sort of thing. Some of it has to do with, you know, you feeling accountable to her pressures and having the courage to shift and say, you know what? I have to live my life the way I need to live it. And then the support from your dad, you know, that's critical too. I tell you, and then now you're out here helping other people realize these things while you're still, we're always working through parts of our childhood. You know, we had Dr. Renee Wilkinson. She's with the Flourishing Institute at Harvard. And her whole focus is on, you know, parent-child relationships and how that affects us, you know, as adults. And that's exactly what you're speaking to. It's an episode you'd probably be interested in seeing. It was just two episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And you're speaking directly to it right now. So it just makes the work that you do that much more sensational when we hear about it, that you've got your journey that you're on, but you're also empowering everyone else to be as strong or stronger, you know, as you, to understand these things about themselves. I think it's awesome work.
Thank you. Look, I mean, I would just so love people to stop judging themselves.
Right.
And, you know, and stop judging themselves and each other. It never creates anything greater. It's never created anything greater, ever.
And sometimes we inherit that, don't we, right? It's just that's how we grew up. We hear it. We think that's how social interaction should work. Right? Our feelings matter more than the person themselves on what they're doing. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, what you think really doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's the antithesis of consciousness.
Right.
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 You know, when you're judging people and judging yourself, obviously. Right. Part of it is, I think our mind is so strong. And I think when we don't have that conscious perspective, just why this is so great, the work that you do, giving people that perspective that what your mind says to you about yourself is not always true,
mm-hmm.
right? And how to work through that. And then what you're trying to say about others, what is that about? What does that say about you in terms of your insecurities or things that you probably don't feel good about inside of yourself.
Yeah. Well, there was quite a few years ago, because, you know, I was worldwide coordinator of Access Consciousness, and there was these three women that I heard stuff that they were saying about me. And I rang Gary Douglas, who's the founder of Access, and I said, hey, I don't think I can do this job anymore. And he said, why? And I went, because I can't handle the judgments. And he went, okay. He went, tell me what's going on. And I told him what was going on, and he said, okay. He said, here's what I want you to do. He said, I want you to look at their lives and look at what they've created. And I went, okay. So I did. And then he said, now I want you to look at your life and look at what you've created.
Absolutely.
And I went, yeah. And I went, okay. And he said, are they judging you, or are they judging what they have not yet chosen and might never choose? And I was like, oh. And I realized it wasn't personal. It's like most people judge because they're uncomfortable with what somebody else is choosing, you know, or and they don't have the courage to choose that. And most people sit back and don't even make a choice. And I'd say I've made more bad choices than most people have made choices, but I chose. And then I went, oh, okay, that maybe might not have been my smartest move, but I'm going to choose again, you know. It's like, don't judge it. Just, you know, brush yourself off, get up the next day, and what else are you going to choose? What other action can you take?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because I firmly believe that if you don't choose, someone else will choose for you, right? In a lot of instances where you don't take the action that is necessary to move you from one stage in life to another, you sometimes lose control of what that narrative is for yourself or what the outcome can be. So hearing you and sharing this is like, for me, it's like, it's almost giving a sense of like, wow, okay, this does make sense, right? Because you get to have an understanding that, you know, you can really have a perspective that people could actually learn about, right? You're doing this work every single day, helping people. How do you translate all of this into helping people be successful in business and even for your own work in business? How do you translate that there?
I get so excited because one of the books, the first book I wrote is Joy of Business. It's translated into 16 languages. You know, I do these classes called Business Done Different. I do private sessions, all of that. But it's, to me, it's really about, most people I find in business also get really stuck because a few different things. They think that they have to, you know, do everything themselves, or they have these insane points of view that lock them up. Maybe it's about hiring staff, or, you know, they've hang up on money, or, you know, creation, and you're looking at money as a source of creation rather than that they are, all these different things. So in the seminars and the books that I have, there's so many different, really different, really different tools that I use and we talk about, and being in question and what it is that you want to create and getting clear on that as well. Because to me, it's, you know, if you want to create something in the world, then you can start a business and you can do that. It's like, and also, if you're not doing something that you love, my question is always like, what are you doing it for? There's so much out there that you can choose and that you can create. You can, you know, so what else? What else? What else? What else? So yeah, there's a lot of different things that I look at in the classes, etc.
How much time have you spent here in the United States?
I actually lived in California for a while, in Santa Barbara, for about 3 years. But I've literally for the past, well, not the past 2 years, but before that, for 17 years, I traveled like 10 months of the year.
How did you
all leave? Over the world. What's that?
How did you leave Santa Barbara? So beautiful.
It is really beautiful. I know it's nice. Everyone always goes, oh, it's so nice. And it is. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. It was great. I had a really nice time. And I really like Australia too. But I'm going to say I've got this private customer on this property in Costa Rica. I probably create that as one of my bases. I am also part owner of a castle in Italy. So
we saw, yes, that. Yes, we saw we, that. We don't we be that. Bragging. We saw that.
No, I want to hear more about that. I love Italy. And the first thing I thought about was like, I want to go there.
Yeah. Oh, you should. It's so beautiful. Look, we found this castle. Someone told us about it and no one had lived in it for 40 years. It was like, you know, everything was falling apart. And Gary Douglas, one of the guys that I work with, he's amazing at like looking at something and you know, fixing it all up and changing it around, et cetera. So we did that. And now it's a boutique hotel. It's got 12 rooms, but it's got this massive ballroom that the sound in it is incredible. It's a friend of mine who's an opera. What's that?
What city is that in?
It's in Casa Borgoni, which is about 30, 40 minutes from Turin, an hour and a half from Milan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Please come. It's wonderful. I'm actually going there next week.
I don't know if we can make it next week. But
maybe not next week, but, you know, give me a couple months. That sounds amazing. Although I think summertime is a little tough in Italy. Is it warm and humid? Is that a good time to be there, though?
Talking to someone from Australia, it's like it's damn hot where I live. So, you know, Italy's like, no, nothing.
So the reason I asked about the United States.
Yeah.
I wondered if there was any city or part of the U.S. in particular that you enjoy more than another part. So is there a city that inspires you or allows you to be more creative or innovative? What are some of your favorite places here?
I loved Santa Barbara, and I spent a lot of time in Malibu. I had a friend who lived there, so I used to drive down to Malibu all the time in Santa Monica. Loved that. I do spend a lot of time in Texas now because the two guys that I work with live in Houston, Texas, but they also have a ranch with horses, etc., out at Blyberville. So I like going out there. I always like New York as well. It's like, I mean, New York's New York. It's like, you know, hello. It's this amazing place. There's a lot of America I have not been to. I would love to do. I'd love to do Middle America, and I'd love to go to like Alabama and South Carolina, and I know that's what everyone always says to me. They have that reaction.
They're great places in Alabama and South Carolina as well. Where Alabama? I was just guessing. Maybe South Carolina. I'm sure there. I know this place is.
I've been to Birmingham. Yeah,
I haven't been there. But what would you say is the opposite of that? Where have you been in the United States? Where you're like, I don't want to ever go there again.
I'm not going to say it's a place, but this friend of mine once said that I had to go to Chuck E. Cheese and took me to Chuck E. Cheese. And I went, right. I don't have to do that again. I went, I don't need to go to Chuck E. Cheese again. Actually, do you know?
Chuck E. Cheese.
I know. And she was like, no, it's very American. And I was like, Colorado Springs, actually. I went to Colorado Springs and I you know, didn't really like it. I like Boulder.
Boulder's good.
Boulder's actually got character, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Colorado Springs, I was like, where are you guys from?
I'm from North Carolina. Deep dark secret, though. I actually worked at Chuck E. Cheese in college.
I'm from Colorado Springs.
It was a terrible experience.
No.
I'm from Michigan. Originally.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I say, you know, New York to me, I think heightened and elevated my critical thinking. I think the West Coast Malibu sort of elevates my free thinking. You know, it just feels like I've lived in Orange County, California for years. I've lived in New York and East Coast for years. And it's just, you have to wear a different helmet when you step out of that, you know, tall apartment building in New York City, and you never know what's coming down the street. Otherwise, you're driving down, you know, PCH or whatever it is. You're thinking about stuff you never thought about before. But they're both very inspiring. So I just wondered, you know, personally for you, what cities meant what to you. So that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, I more California feel. But it's also more like home, like with the beach and all that sort of thing. So, yeah. But I'd like to explore more. I would.
Do you have any daily practices that you do that just sort of keep you grounded in that? I know there's a lot of tools with access consciousness, but are there some things that you do daily that help keep you focused in the right headspace?
One of the main things I do is usually when I'm in Australia, when you wake up, America's still awake and so is Europe. So there's this energy of people going, are you awake? Are you awake? So it's like really, you know, and you could very much get caught up in just, you know, straight away going to your phone and looking at all your different platforms and you know, answering things. But I don't do that. And one of the things they do, even before I get out of bed, it's like, you know, put my hands on my body somewhere and just really acknowledge my body and be like, hey, it's like morning, you know, whether it's like I'm stretching or even just stretching my ankles on my toes or something like that. And I'll ask a few questions and be like, hey, what would it take for today to be greater than yesterday? Or just be really present with myself. Now, that could take 1 minute or it could take 10 minutes. Like here, where my room is here, you know, I've been waking up at about 5 and the sun is rising, like at, you know, 5:15. So I've been lying in bed just going, wow, this is insane. It's so beautiful. So I would say just taking that, like I said, could be, you know, 1 minute, 10 minutes, 30 minutes just with myself before you start, you know, hearing everything else. And one of the questions I would ask is, where is my energy required today? Because there's always so many projects and so many people demanding of you. And yet just because they have these needs doesn't mean I have to fulfill them. Like what actually, where is my energy required? Maybe it's about empowering someone to know that they know, you know, anything like that. So, but that's probably what I do. And then I usually move my body at least once a day. Like, I mean, obviously I'm moving my body all the time, but something, whether it's going for a run or horse riding or Pilates or something like that, it's just, it makes me happier. Absolutely.
So what are some of the things you're not doing or trying not to do? I don't know if you believe in vices or whatever it is, but for example, Charles and I went to lunch about an hour ago and I have a sweet tooth. And I bought a cupcake and I knew I shouldn't have bought it, right? Charles and I ate and I felt so guilty that I gave it to these young ladies at the table next to me. I didn't even eat it. So I'm fighting this sweet tooth, right? Is there anything you're trying not to do or you're trying to work out that you feel like, you know, this just isn't long term for me?
Look, I had a lot of vices. I like to say I've had a very colorful life and I have no place to judge anyone. I've done, like, you know, I mean, I remember at one stage I was smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, smoking marijuana, taking chemical drugs. Like I was doing everything. And it was when I turned 30 and I went, Simone, you've got to give something up. Like this is really bad, you know. So I gave up smoking cigarettes was my first thing. And I was like, well done, Simone, you know. But so I feel like early on in my life, I've definitely explored a lot. And I have, honestly, I have no regret. Like I'm right. I'm good with everything I chose. But I feel like where I'm at now, I don't judge what I'm choosing. Like if I, you know.
There you go. That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, so that cupcake is up to do a lot. Fine. You should get another cupcake. Is what I'm trying to say is get more cupcakes.
No, cupcakes don't matter.
Especially the red velvet ones. America does red velvet cupcakes so well. They're good.
As long as you don't tell me to give up margaritas. As long as you don't say give up those.
No. I'm not very good with tequila. I love a glass of wine, though. I mean, I happily have cocktails and whatever. That's what I mean. I don't – where I'm at now with my life, I'm not judging what I'm choosing. So if I want to go and have cocktails or want to eat cup, I actually don't have a sweet tooth. I'm like the opposite. I'm like, give me something salty, you know. Give me a cheese platter before the sweet.
Yeah.
So, but what if we didn't judge it, you know? So,
And Simone, I'd like to think it's judging it. It's just, I don't like where it lands on my body anymore. It's just like, you know what?
Oh, is that? Yeah.
Judging is one thing, but it's like, hey, dude, you can't, you know, it's time to slow down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, also the way you feel. It's funny. I was, I had lunch like a couple of hours ago too. And I hadn't eaten since lunch yesterday and I was really hungry. And this friend of ours got us this Mexican that was so good. And I was like, oh, and I was eating it. And then I you know that moment you know that you're done, your body's done, but you're like, it tastes really good. So you like override it. And so about half an hour before I came on here, I was lying in my bed talking to my friend going, how can you be so hungry? And then now I'm so full, like that moment. So yeah, it doesn't feel good in your body, but you're like, okay. It'll work itself out.
with the life you live being so busy and, you know, traveling here and there, are you able to make space and time for relationship, for love, if you will?
She said she had a colorful life.
yes, I did. And yes, I have. Look, I split up with a long-term relationship about 3 years ago. We actually wrote a book together called Relationship, Are You Sure You Want One? And it was a question because we wanted people to question. Yeah. And then we released it in America. And just as we released the book, we split up. And our PR agent was like, oh, my God. And I was like, don't worry about it. We've got this because we're actually still friends. We work together. And so, yeah, at the moment I'm not in a relationship, but, you know,
You're still living your life, right?
Every now and then.
Say that one more time. I missed that. I know, I really do.
I sheepishly said I have a couple of people that I play with every now and then.
You sheepishly said,
okay. Yeah.
So you
and then you made me repeat it.
Yeah, and he made you repeat it too.
No. Yeah. What's no that?
Judgment. No judgment at all.
Zero judgment
living,
over here.
Living your best life. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. No, truly. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's funny. So what's next for you? And you've got a lot going on here. It's probably hard to even think about what's next. And I know you feel like you have this kind of servant mentality in helping others. But what about you? What's next for you? And what do you want out of your life? You've done so many wonderful things. What do you think about next?
Good question. I'm at the moment I'm on like a 9-week tour is what I would say.
Okay.
So next I'm literally in New York for a day and then I'm off to Europe and then back home for 3 weeks and then Texas again. So it's, you know, my travel has sort of stepped up a lot again. And it's a good question and not one that I know I have an answer to, but it is something that I look at all the time. Being here in Costa Rica is really important to me. Like getting this place all up and functioning. And like I said before, it's called El Lugar, which is the place in Spanish. And my friend Gary, he wrote this book called The Place, which is just phenomenal. It's like, at the moment, that's a project I'm working on. I'd like to create that. We've got a script written. Scott Rosenberg wrote it, and we're looking to how we can get that out there into the world and create it as a movie. So there's always like bigger projects that land in my lap that I like. I like playing with and seeing, okay, how are we gonna get this out there? But I'm gonna say the whole target of everything is to wake people up who actually desire to be woken up, because there's a lot who don't, which I've discovered over the years. I thought everybody did. You know, I wanted to go around and shake everyone by the shoulders and say, don't you get it? There's gotta be something else. And some people are like, no. And then there's so many people out there who are seeking something different, and we know that there's something different, and we have to create that. We have to choose that and get together and go, okay, what can we collaborate together? How do we create a better life here, and not a better life based on I have more things. I'm not against things. I have great luxury in my life, but more joy, more happiness. Like, you know, happiness is something that we can choose, and so every project I work on is just like this leaping into that. So they're the things at the moment that I'm working on. And it's funny you say that, like in service to people, because it's sort of a yes and a no. I selfishly would say every class I do every day is also about me. I don't exclude me from my work or what I do or the books I write or anything like that at all, ever. I think that's really important, not to exclude yourself.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
You know, one of the things, and I'm coming to realize a lot, is that to your point earlier, not all of us feel like we deserve happiness. And that's the sad part. If we have people around us who may not be experiencing flourishing, we almost start to feel guilty for being happy, et cetera, especially as kids growing up and we start to get a little older and we may have some. So to your point, you really have to start by feeling like you deserve to be happy and flourish.
Yeah.
And then to add to that, I think also the idea of thinking about yourself, right? Because we're always told, no, you're selfish. If all you do is ever think about is yourself. And, you know, you go back to this whole, like the idea of being on an airplane, right? They say, put the mask on yourself first before you help someone else. And you know, there's a part that I always go back to, which is, wow, we have to take care. Who else takes care of us if we don't take care of ourselves? We can't leave that oftentimes to others, even if it's like someone in your relationship with, family, to your point, right? Friends, like, who else, if not but for you, that takes care of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, I honestly think, what if that's one of the biggest lies we've ever been told, is that you're not supposed to be selfish? Like, I remember this distinctly as a kid. I think I was about 8 years old and I was in the bathroom at school and washing my hands, and there's a mirror in front of me, And I was looking in the mirror and this girl came in and she went, oh, you love yourself. And I remember going, no, I don't. No, I don't. And I was trying to back out of like the fact that I was looking in the mirror at myself as an 8-year-old telling this girl, oh, I don't love myself. Please don't, you know. And I'm like, that's insane that that is a mindset of an 8-year-old. You know, we should be. Like yesterday I actually said to this friend of mine, we're here in Costa Rica, and I said, you do get you're more brilliant than you think you are, right? And she looked at me with this like smirk. And I said, you need to remind yourself of that every day. And then she used my bathroom and she was looking in the mirror and she looked in the mirror and she went, you're more brilliant than you think you are. And I was like, yeah. And then she started smiling. I'm like, but that's, she is, you know, most of us are. And we don't acknowledge it. And what if we did acknowledge it? Like, I mean, my last relationship, I actually had, he had a son. So I had a stepson that for 8 years. So from 5 to 13. And it was so amazing to see this kid and how the like I said, the mindset of like when they're at school and the what they get fed, you know. And I'd always say to him, you know, happiness is just a choice. And we actually had these stickers, and I remember he took one of the stickers and put it on the end of his bed. And so when he was doing all grumpy and stuff, and I'd, you know, go, hey, what does that say? And he'd be like, happiness is just a choice. And I'd be like, well, you know. And but he started to get it, that it's like he could choose how he wanted to wake up in the morning. You know, do you want to be happy or do you want to be frustrated and sad, or who does that belong to? Like, is that even yours? Like, what if, you know, 99% of our thoughts, feelings and emotions are not ours, and we buy it as ours. So we walk around thinking that we're angry, thinking that we're sad, and taking on so much of our parents' stuff, or, you know, your siblings or whatever it is. And it's like, no, who are you? Like, if you were choosing your life today, what would you choose? What works for you? And really look at that. And a piece, I think a really key piece here is, when you choose for you, you start to show other people that they can choose for them, mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, your friends or your kids or whatever that is. Because if we're all trying to choose the same thing, we're never going to create anything different, you know. But I choose something and then you go, oh, okay, hang on a second, that's cool, you know. What I like that's like sort of similar or whatever, or out creates that. Like if we played leapfrog with each other, you know, what else is possible?
So, you know, I thought you were going to say your friend looked in the mirror and said, my God, Simone, why is this mirror so big? You must really love yourself.
When's the grand opening? When's the grand opening in Costa Rica?
I wish I could give you a date. I'm planning on like April next year. So, yeah.
Okay.
All right. We're coming.
Good.
Whether we're invited or not, we're going to be there.
Well, I'd love it if you came.
Okay. So listen, we only have about 2 minutes left. We'd like to do two things. One, if you have any questions of us, please ask. Or if we've left anything out, we'd love for you to share it with us now.
I would like to know what drove you guys to actually choose to do this.
I like Charles's version of the story.
What's that?
You know, I knew he was going to do that, first of all. You know, BJ and I met a couple of years ago through a mutual friend, and he came over to my home, and we hit it off from the very beginning. And I felt like this was like someone who I could only not only have this brotherly dialogue with about anything or nothing, right? But certainly create scenarios and conversations where we're uplifting one another in a dialogue where it's rich and there's so much there. And it's like, talk about being vulnerable. Like, and that's the one thing that I value is like, particularly relationships with men where you're vulnerable with one another. And that happened really quickly between the two of us. And the more we engage in these conversations, the more we said, wait a minute, there's some things we could share with others that could be really important in terms of a dialogue and conversation that could really help people, that can inspire people. And certainly lend our voices to something that people that look like us don't typically have the ability or the opportunity to talk about in this type of form. So my version, and you know, months later, we sort of put it all together and decided we're going to do this.
Only thing he left out was tequila and whiskey.
Tequila and whiskey, always a part of that.
Make a good conversation.
Always. They do. So that was our inspiration. And we're, you know, we're moving into year 3 soon. And we love it. You know, we love preparing for it, executing, and then thinking about what's next. So we appreciate you asking that.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the beautiful thing about it is we get to meet amazing people like you and learn from amazing people like you. Like, it's inspiring. And it's one of those things where we know that this platform gives a lot of people something to take hold of and take away from when they have the opportunity to hear from people like yourself and the work that you do in the world and all that you're accomplishing and the more that you're going to do in the future for yourself and for others.
And then the last thing I'd say is just thank you for, you know, taking a sort of a personal spin on things, right? We could have talked about your business and all that, but you were very vulnerable and transparent around your personal journey, and we really appreciate that.
You're welcome. Look, I have nothing to hide. Like I said, the colorful life I've lived. I think that's what we have to be with each other. Like, really?
Absolutely.
We're going to change anything. Yeah. So I want to thank you guys so much for having me on here, but also thank you for choosing to do that, like take some action and go, okay, I'm going to move forward with this. Like, how brilliant. So thank you.
Our pleasure.
Back to you. Thank you. Let's stay in touch and look forward to talking with you sometime soon, seeing you either in Italy or in Costa Rica.
Colorado Springs.
Alabama.
Colorado Springs, Alabama. You pick, we'll be around.
Sounds good.
And thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.